Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Rad Gontos calling Rad Gontos. Come in, Rad Gontos. Oh, wait. Is he there?
Where's my theme music?
We played it. You didn't hear it?
No. You played the intro. Did you? Oh, you did great. You play some Casbah for me?
I'll find some.
Okay.
Where in the world is Waldo today?
Yeah, I think where in the world is Waldo is appropriate. I'm calling you from on Skype, actually. What an incredible world we live in with all this technology. Right? It's crazy. I said I'm calling you from Cairo, Egypt.
Cairo, Egypt. So what are you, like, trying to test the boundaries of how far you can do your radio show from? We've done it from Hawaii. Now we're into the other direction. We're in Cairo. Next year you'll be in Pago or Timbuktu.
Well, here's the thing. You keep telling me that, you know, OC Talk Radio has all the capabilities of a juggernaut media, entity. Well, and I keep trying to push your limits. And you know what? You haven't failed me yet, so you're good.
It's the World Wide Web. That doesn't mean you have to go all the way around the world and test it here.
I'm very literal, Paul. What can I tell you?
So what are you doing in Cairo, Egypt?
I had an opportunity to actually go to a furniture expo, export-import show.
Wow.
Cairo. And I have been to it before. I think it was the second year that they had put it on, which was 2004, 2005.
Uh-huh.
And so I got another opportunity this year to come and see it, and they are in their 14th year.
When you put your hand in front of your mouth, it cuts off the thing there. So, okay. 14th year doing import-export. But you don't import-export furniture. What? You're a designer.
Well, but we really source stuff from everywhere. I mean, if you think about it, you buy stuff for stock. You buy stuff from Hay Needle or whatever on these websites. The items are coming, maybe shipped to you from a local distributor in the United States. It could very easily be that it's actually been sourced from overseas.
Yeah, that's true. So you're just going straight to the source here. Do they create a lot of furniture in Cairo? And is it furniture that fits our tastes in American design?
Believe it or not, it's a whole range of stuff. I actually found a line of retro office furniture that's very cool that I haven't even seen in the States or even come from Europe, that's building on a tradition with this particular manufacturer, building on tradition of something they had done like in the 70s or the late 60s.
Hmm.
And so they went back to their archives and actually are heightening their sort of legacy and authenticity, and then basically updating the approach to it to where it's a 2017 collection. But along with that, you've got everything from, hand carved stuff that's more labor intensive, marquetry, mm-hmm. All that sort of French and Louis XV kind of furniture, all the way to stuff that's very contemporary, K-alike. I mean, it turns out that there's actually manufacturers here that actually supply IKEA.
Really?
Yeah.
How about
that? There's ones that, it's not just furniture. It's actually a very booming fabric manufacturing industry. They do all their upholstery. They do all their framing. One particular person who I have known for years and actually had been generous enough to arrange for my invitation, they ship containers with the furniture to France and to Europe that's sold in the likes of Macy's and department stores of that nature.
Isn't it amazing? We do live in a global world, even though the world doesn't seem to like it, or some parts of the world don't seem to like it right now.
It's an interesting situation, because you even asked me before we got on the air about, well, you know, given what's happening in the United States as far as our sort of reevaluation of
our travel bans against certain seven right. Muslim countries here.
Let me just say this, though, Paul. It's been, you know me, I'm very involved and current, but I also like to dig deeper.
Right.
And it seems to me that if you look at history in a snapshot format, are you still there?
Oh, yeah, you froze for a second. Go ahead.
Okay, so even if you want to get some confidence out of this or strength, or maybe it scares you even more, if you look at the history as a movie rather than snapshots, we've been down this path before. You know, I found out that basically in 1838, okay, that there was a report that was generated by a Congressional Select Committee, right, that basically concluded that the members of that committee concluded that increased immigration rates was a threat to the, quote, peace and tranquility of our citizens.
Oh, yeah. We've been afraid of immigrants. For an immigrant nation, we're shockingly scared of new immigrants. It's like, we're here, but no more.
Right. And we've talked, and I talked about this with the, you know, the tolerance or intolerance to Catholics,
right,
for example. And then, you know, Irish
and yeah, whatever, right? All my relatives.
It happened in 1938. There was a anti-immigration fears to where there was groups against European immigrants. So this is groups like the Order of the Star-Spangled Banner and the Know Nothing Party.
Yeah, the Know Nothing in the 1850s, right?
Right, and so it's interesting. I even found something that referred to, you know, and this is goes a little later to the 1860s and 1915, where there was more waves of European immigrants entering the States, is, you know, some from Russia, Austria, Italy, a lot of them actually were in this new group were Jewish.
Yeah,
Jewish,
right,
immigrants.
Right.
And even though there was a continuing increasing need for labor, immigrant labor, which, you know, was in California, we can kind of relate to that. There was a strong anti-immigration feeling towards this new growing population. And Congress even decided that immigrants should be required to pass medical exams and have no criminal records.
Right.
You know, in 1903, the people in the States were so fearful of European radicals entering the country that the government actually added anarchists and subversives to the 1891 Act.
Wow.
You know, where it accounted for, it looked at immigrants, and it actually says, the results concluded the United States, there was this commission report by, I think it's called Dillingham, okay, under Teddy Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
And the results concluded that the United States was not benefiting from immigration because the immigrants were inferior to United States citizens.
Yeah. And that's exactly what we're afraid of right now. They're either poor, they're inferior, they're changing the complexion, the character, the color of America, or they're a direct threat. We can't let these Syrians in because there might be a few bad guys slip in.
And before the Syrians, it was the Chinese, and there was the Mexicans, and, you know, right, like I said, the Irish, and the...
So in, you know, Egypt, they're not up in arms right now. Although, if we move the embassy to Jerusalem, that's going to inflame a lot of people in the Middle East.
Well, let's leave that out of the equation, because that's a totally, and we tend to lap over stuff and throw things all in the same basket. But you asked me, well, what was the reaction to people here? And I think the interesting take on the reaction to people here is that I thought I would get a lot more like, what's going on and why are you guys doing this and
yeah,
all this stuff, but I didn't get that. What I got was a sense of a little bit of being dazed, you know, and apprehensive, but the apprehension is from the uncertainty,
right?
You know, or the not being able to to depend on the stability that maybe we present,
right?
Okay,
so they can handle it, they just don't know what it is.
Yeah, and I think we're dealing with the same thing kind of internally in the States as well. But, you know, there was not that sense of desperation, you know. I mean, and here's sort of the wake-up call, and I think we're going to get this wake-up call, okay? Anybody who's traveled extensively, and I've been fortunate enough to do that from a very young age, and I have a lot of friends that have, and, you know, a bunch of them that are actually born and raised in the United States that have also had, you know, with international business and doing projects all over and all this stuff. What I think we're in for as a nation, as a reality check, is that the world will just simply adjust
and move on
without us.
We're not indispensable. All right.
No.
But the world doesn't revolve around us.
We believe that we are central to the universe.
Yeah.
And if you look at, and there's been some reports on this lately, you know, there's been an increase in wealth across the world.
Right.
Right. There has been an elevating of stuff across the world.
Dramatic.
And the world market in its own is, you know, this is a global market, right? So I think people will just adjust, and we might actually end up being, I don't know about losers, but we definitely will not necessarily be sitting in the same capacity in some of these relationships as before. And I think we don't get that yet on a large scale. I think the majority of people don't understand that, and yet we are actually very dependent on the world.
Well, somebody said we're entering down the road that Britain followed after it, as it lost its colonial empire, that it suddenly wasn't the center of the world anymore here, and suddenly it was just one nation among many. They still struggle with that image. They don't see themselves that way, nor do we. Well, let's see if we can get your guest into this conversation, because we could talk forever here.
And, you know, we do this every show, right? We do this every show about how do we link this.
Right,
you know, and I do have a way to do this with our guest today. Is Craig on the line?
He is. He's here. Say hi, Craig.
Hey, good afternoon or good morning, whatever the case may be.
What is it? I don't even know what time it is in Cairo right now.
It is actually 10:15 in the evening, guys.
Okay.
So you're starting your day. I'm ending mine.
Right.
But glad to be with you. Thanks for joining us, Craig. I appreciate it. This is really, you know, testing Paul's capabilities, so by all means, do so.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. And I can talk about, you know, I was told I could talk about a variety of things, but if you would like me to start with the conversation at hand, I can certainly do that.
Well, yes, absolutely. And I want to kind of emphasize one particular aspect of this, Craig, and it is that life is a dynamic, right? I mean, why don't you tell people what you do? Because I think we'll delve back into that. But give them a little background about yourself and what you currently are doing.
Okay. All right. That's fair enough. Born and raised in California. First part of my life was spent in Northern California. And then back in the 80s, I came down to Southern California. And for sake of conversation, have landed in Orange County for the last 30-plus years. I started as a salesman. My first real job was I telemarketed on the telephone. And please keep in mind, that was a while ago. And, of course, the naysayer said you couldn't do that. And I fortunately learned how. I bought my first home at 21 years old doing that.
Wow.
So, fast forward, I got my real estate license, worked predominantly in the mortgage industry for about 10 years. I did some real estate transactions, and then I said I needed to do something new. I went to work at Merrill Lynch, and I got my securities licenses there, my insurance licenses, and I did that for 6 years, which was great timing, by the way. I entered the marketplace with Merrill Lynch the same year, that same month, that Orange County declared bankruptcy.
Oh, good. Good timing.
Yes. Kind of a benchmark, yes. After 6 years of Merrill Lynch, I went independent, and I continued to work. I had a financial planning firm dealing predominantly with high-net-worth individuals, charities, corporations, places where there was to move, invest money, and share it. And predominantly my demographics were 55 to 75 more than not, and I'm watching that segment of our society continue to grow, and the insurance industries have really set up some neat, nifty stuff for that industry, for that portion of our society. And then I'm an actor, I'm a comedian, I'm a member at the Grambling Theater up in Hollywood, which has produced the likes of, you know, Will Ferrell, people like that, a lot of Saturday Night Live.
Huge group. Are you part of the troupe up there? Do you actually perform, or are you part? I forgot how they have different classifications, I know, of membership or belonging up there.
Yeah, that's correct. Am I in the Groundlings troupe proper? No. However, you have to audition to get into their school, which I've done. I passed a series of their courses, and I'm continuing on. So, yes, the hope will be that one day I will be an actual groundling.
Amazing. Quite an honor just to even be accepted into their program there.
So you sound like you went through a whole bunch of changes in your life journey, Greg, on a personal level, and continue to pursue things and push yourself and explore, right? I mean, do you think that that's very much part of the human condition, or because you're sort of a life coach as well. I mean, I know you have a focus on financial, but you also have a life coach. Actually, one of your testimonials that you had sent me, thank you so much, was relevant to a father who was kind of having a hard time having his son kind of find his purpose or his direction, and so he had him work with you, right? And that was actually, yeah. I found that to be very interesting that, and we've said this before, that, you know, regardless of person's age, life's journey is made of changes. And we are all seemingly constantly making decisions of how we, you know, we're either challenged or we are paralyzed by those changes and what we do about them.
Right. Well, and it's the age-old question, when you come across to a decision in life, is it an obstacle or is it a lever? Mm. And it's funny you mentioned that one gentleman, because he falls right into the idealistic story of what you two were discussing previously about coming to America. And he's Vietnamese, and his dad was forced out of Saigon back in the 70s, came to the United States, built a tax and insurance planning business, and did quite well, and naturally thought his son was going to do probably the same. His son found me in a classroom instructing on a variety of financial services products. And he approached me and he said, I need your help. So I said, we met, and after a session or two, I realized there was no way this guy was going to ever work in a commission sales type position. Mm-hmm. And we have just recently placed him in an IT position with a large tech firm down here in Orange County, and he's happy as hell. So when people are looking at their old ideals about how to make money and where they are, dealing with the 55 to 75, which now frequently goes into 85 and 95.
Right. Sure. Easy.
I have to concur with what you gentlemen were saying earlier, that there's a real, you know, it's the good old US of A, and we are the flagship of the planet mentality. And in our reality, the reality is that we are basically now, in my opinion, a nation amongst nations. We are one of them.
Right.
And that's kind of a bitter pill to swallow for some older folks.
Been a very bitter pill for my friends in the Midwest who lost their manufacturing base and haven't figured out what their new narrative is, what their new reason for being is, where their new jobs are coming from. They're waiting for somebody to force all these things to come back and recreate what once was a very prosperous manufacturing community. And I keep telling them, that boat has sailed. Even if you erect tariffs and they build factories again here in the Midwest, they're going to be filled with robots, not high-paying, low-skilled assembly jobs. You're not going to get $70,000 a year anymore to put wheels on tires on cars.
I have to agree.
Well, here, I mean, it's kind of funny, right? We kind of went down this path. It's like it's sometimes I find it ironic that we're surprised by this.
Yeah.
When in fact the last 40 to 50 years, 60 years has been nothing but going towards this.
Right.
I mean, when everything is globalized, right? And sadly, you know, this it used to be, and I saw something the other day about the, you know, I think it was a quote. Or it was credited to Albert Einstein, where he said something about the West being a luxury liner that it's got all the amenities but has no rudder.
Mm.
that it doesn't know where it wants to go.
Yeah, right.
Right. And yet, you know, we look at things, and even today, I think we still think about things and countries in a manner that is, you know, from traveling, anybody who's traveling knows that it's probably not true, but, you know, the manner is that there's inequality or discrepancy in terms of wealth or whatever that used to be across borders, right? Used to say, you know, that certain parts of the world were underdeveloped or certain parts of the world were in poverty or whatever. Well, it seems now that that discrepancy in inequality on certain levels is not happening across borders. It's happening actually internal to countries.
Yeah, there's places being hollowed out in various countries that have lost because of globalization. Jobs have left. Immigrants have moved in. And there are people who've benefited. If you look at the United States on the two coasts, we're pretty well thriving. We've adjusted to this change and have thrived with it. Yes, in California, we lost a lot of our manufacturing base, but we replaced it with a knowledge-based economy that's even bigger and better and more international in scope. But the middle part of the country, which voted for our current president here, has felt abandoned and neglected and lost in this transition for a long time, and they finally rose up in mass and said, "Enough."
Well, Craig, let me ask you this too, from a putting your financial hat on for a minute, because of your experience and background in the industry. I mean, you know, we've had changes that have been kind of very challenging and jarring for people's 401ks, for example, right?
Yeah.
I mean, mortgages, value of property, right? So
the Great Recession.
Now I'm going to ask you from the perspective of your coaching, how do we increase the chances for people to be able to manage those kind of changes in lives?
And let me back up and add one corollary to that. Are people ready to handle these things? I didn't want to handle my own retirement. I didn't want to figure out my own health care. I didn't want to learn how to pump my own gas put in my own phones. I mean, through the years, we've been asked to do more and more things on our own, to the point that even I, as an aging baby boomer in my 60s now, sometimes wish we could just go back and I wish I had a just guaranteed retirement plan. I wish I had the phone company would come out and install the phone like they used to. I wish the guy would run out and pump my own gas. All more and more through life, from the silly to the serious, we've had to take on more responsibilities. And as Rod always says, that's a good thing, but I don't think most of us are ready for it.
Well, you know, let's face it. We live in a world that's relative. There's nothing absolute out there.
Right.
And being just slightly a bit younger than you, yeah, I can certainly relate to those things, you know? But when you step back and you look at the big picture of things, the two of you both made some very poignant statements. Yeah, the Midwest is reeling from lack of change. And I will venture to say in my lifetime, that has been one of their downfalls, is that they've always not embraced change.
No.
They like this, the tried and true. And the coastal communities seem to thrive. I'll make two points of reference here. Can you hear me okay? I'm going to go back a ways. Back in the 80s, there was a book that came out called Megatrends, and most of us read it.
Yep.
If you go back and test your memory, most of what that was in that book came true.
Hmm.
And one of the things he said is that manufacturing jobs, in particular, the auto industry should be farmed out and we should move into information technology.
Right.
Well, look what happened. Now, fast forward. After the crash of 2008, everyone is gloom and doom. There's a gentleman by the name of Dr. Diamantis, and he wrote a book called Abundance. And if you do tune into CNN and Fox News, and that's your view of the world, it looks pretty grim.
Yeah.
Pretty, pretty grim. You read the book, and statistically, and he is a keynote speaker at CEO Fortune 500 all the time. He commands a large speaking fee. And he shows without a doubt, statistically, that actually there's more wealth around the world than there has ever been. And let me emphasize around the world. And that things that we fear, like violent crimes, crimes against children and women, things of that nature, are down substantially, hundreds of percent in some cases.
Yes.
So when we look at the view that way, then we say, well, maybe it's time to adjust. And as humans, we don't want to adjust. So you ask me as a coach, what's the biggest issue? I don't necessarily feel like doing that. And that's when I have to say, well, then we got to go from there. So I think in premise, in fundamental, my story is pretty consistent.
So what we're really saying is, and just to give you a little background, Craig, prior to doing my interior design, my first path was economics. And so I tend to basically really want to delve into stuff and look at background and kind of track it and look at stuff like this. And one of the things that I remember very, very much is that there's a sense of inertia that happens, right? That the human beings, you know, are reluctant to change. There are not a lot of people that are motivated by constantly changing, that people are okay with wanting to be comfortable. To Paul's point that he was saying where, you know, now there's an uncertainty about my future. And my question to you, Paul, is, well, when was it really ever genuinely that you had certainty?
We were promised. If you join, my father was of the World War II generation, and when they came home from the war, they were promised prosperity. They were promised job security. If you joined a corporation, they would take care of you for life. You would advance. There was a paternalistic presence there, whether it was the government or big business or somebody looking out for you, watching over you, helping you. And they created some safety nets. If you stumbled and fell, we'd catch you. If you fall, but there was, and yes, you had to pick yourself up and rise up the ladder. We won't do everything for you. That was the feeling that of the whole welfare society, that we were creating too much of the, you know, the people reliant on handouts. So there was always that feeling you had to pick yourself up and do stuff. But right now, all of those things collapsed and we're on our own. I read a book not long ago that said, if you work for a corporation today, you still need to think of yourself as an independent contractor. You need to constantly keep saying, what are they doing for me? Is this the best opportunity for me? What are the skills should I add to advance myself? Everything you always preach, Rod, about self-reliance. But we were taught once upon a time that there was somebody looking out for you.
Yeah, but Paul, I came to the States in 85, right?
Right.
I mean, I've had family in there since the 60s, but I came to the States in 85. And I could tell you just from the time that I've been in the States, and I'm just looking at the States versus globally, because this has probably happened multiple times in different countries on different time frames. We had the real estate market crash in 91.
Right.
Right. And that so to speak, 80s bubble of illusionary security went out the window.
I remember going to a real estate seminar that said, how to survive until 95. It was like, how do we survive three or four more years till it comes back again here? It'll never come back, we thought.
We've had it a couple more times since then, right? And my point is this, and I tend to agree with Craig. I think if, and maybe we can, we as a community, maybe we as just sitting here talking today or people that are listening to us, maybe we can get a sense of comfort out of it or sense of confidence out of it that we have been down this path before.
Right.
And the fact that part of the real crux of the matter is that we as human beings do not want to change.
No.
So we convince ourselves to deal and compromise and accept things, which, and now I want to switch into a different tact in here in a minute, but we accept things, we compromise things, we settle for less, we're okay with lower quality, we're okay with longer working hours, we're okay with out of balanced lives, right? That affect everything in our sphere, our relationships, all of this stuff, right? Because we don't want to change. I remember one of the things that I heard from, you know, everybody did the Tony Robbins Power series, right? Well, one of the things that stuck with me, and it's a very nuanced shift, is that we do so much to avoid pain.
Yeah.
Okay, our wiring is to do so much to avoid pain. And I remember, you know, he said, well, what if we actually, instead of avoiding pain, put all this energy to avoid pain, What if we actually were motivated to increase, to maximize pleasure? And I'm not talking about this in a sort of a sexual way, but to maximize pleasure. What if your actual DNA triggers were to actually increase the positive stuff versus put all the energy to avoid the negative stuff? So, Greg, how do you work through this with people? How do you get people to see the possibilities? And, you know, how do they thrive?
How do you get them to change? How do you get people to change, particularly as they get older? The older we get, the more set in our ways, the more scared we are of change. At least that's what I've observed.
Well, I have to agree with you. I have to agree with you, and I can give you all kinds of experiences, but really it keeps coming back to the two biggest motivators in life are fear and greed.
Right.
And I put fear at the top of that list, and there's no doubt about that. And a lot of what I teach is people that say, I'm afraid of what's out there. And I have to just tell them, with all due respect, there is no out there. It's the truth. Yeah. There is. And people don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear self-reliance. And just let me make a comment on something you said about the age of the corporation and coming back to the country and prosperity and taking care of you and on. And
right.
Yeah, that worked. I mean, for a number of years, that worked. But as our sense of time picks up and we're moving at a faster and faster and faster pace, we have to be able to grasp what's good and in some ways find it emotionally. Let me underscore the word emotionally. Find a way to get comfortable with these changes. And just let me kind of give you a result. Because working in the financial services industry, without being a naysayer, and in fact, I just want to be realistic, there is an underbelly that's not so pleasant.
Right.
And the people that suffer from that underbelly are junk you public out there. Let's go back to 1995. I started at Merrill Lynch. And I'm not picking on Merrill Lynch because I got a great deal of good things from that organization, but they just happen to be this topic of conversation. And so at about 1998 or 9, online day trading starts taking place with Charles Schwab. And people can open their own account, and for $5 they can buy and sell stocks from the comfort of their own living room.
Right.
Charles Schwab got death threats over that. We're sitting in a meeting with a bunch of 20 and 30 and 40 and 50-year-olds, and we say to the manager, gee, don't you think we should be looking into this day trading thing? And the response was, you know what? We're just not convinced this internet thing's going to take off.
Yeah.
And we looked at each other and we go, well, you know, and then the next comment was typically something along the lines of, boys, you can't argue with 100 years of success.
Right.
So they're looking in the rearview mirror. Nothing bad, but I think Merrill Lynch somewhat epitomizes what's happened to a lot of things in this country. And so now they are where they are. And I'm not going to make a judgment call one way or the other, but a lot of those emotions and ideals and the things that you brought up are all meshed in that type of thing, and I understand where you're coming from.
Well, but, you know, here's the funny thing, Greg, I don't think we're sitting high and lofty and looking down at people. I think we all go through this. Let me reiterate. I think there is a part of the human condition, the DNA, human DNA, that is resistant to change, resistant to stepping out of the comfort levels of wanting, needing to do something new and different now in order either to sustain your level of, you know, quality of life, whatever it is that we hold dear, right? But I think there's also a part of us that's delusional. Let's just call it like it is, right? We're friggin' delusional. We convince ourselves all kinds of crap instead of basically just looking at things for what they are. Right? And some of it basically is ugly.
I agree with that 100%, yes. I'll say this. As a financial advisor, people come and they have a private consultation with me, typically a couple, in some cases an individual. And I'll say, okay, tell me what you've got. What do you want to do? I'll do the profile and start going down the list. And they give me an idea of what they have in mind, and one of the first things that goes through my head is, wow, you watch too much TV. Most of what you know is wrong, and I have to spend the first portion of the interview dismantling old ideas. And then I bring them up to speed, and they're, oh, okay. And so you know, and I want to, well, I'll stop there. I could give you more specific examples if you want.
But I've been kind of being a little bit flippant about this, and I've been reiterating this a couple of times in the last couple of weeks. But, you know, I think ignorance, which, honest to God, is a personal choice. I mean, ignorance in the age of information, in the era of information, is a personal choice. Okay. You can argue that there's way too much information out there, and I can tell you that basically maybe there's too much of it, but you still are able to use good judgment and at least exposing yourself to enough of it to make up a safe conclusion about what probably is the case and what isn't.
Yes, so I don't know is not an excuse anymore because it's easy to know.
Right, and if you Absolutely. Choose to basically feed yourself from one particular trough only when you have the whole, you know, smorgasbord of information out there, okay, then that's your choice. And you know, I you just reminded me, Greg, you go back to, like, you know, 85, it's like, you know, it's like the dinosaur time, right? I mean, I remember the days when the internet was a bulletin board, right? I mean, there was nothing, there was covered wagon days in 1985. I mean, I was having a conversation today with somebody. I actually needed to get to the airport to pick up my bags because they didn't make the connecting flights with me, right? And so here I am in Cairo, Egypt, okay? There's a lot of population. The infrastructure is not up to speed in a lot of ways as far as, you know, the roads are and there's a lot of cars on the roads. It's just, you know, it's a sort of what we used to refer to as a developing country. And yet, I picked up my friggin' phone and I tapped into an app, and I ended up actually using Uber and to get a cab to basically take me to the airport, right? And we were talking about how did we even function without mobile phones, let alone the internet before, right? And yet we did. Yet we did, right? And going back to your friends in the Midwest, Paul, you know, there's a certain part of the population, I think, again, it's the human condition, that wants to act like this is just like, how did I wake up one day and find that the American dream is gone? How did I wake up one day and find out that my skill sets are no longer currently, you know, in demand? How did I wake up one day? Well, here's the thing that's wrong about that statement. You didn't wake up one day. This has been going on all around you. There was a book that was written in called "The Living at the Speed of Light."
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Greg, have you ever there's "Living at the Speed of Light," and it basically talked about everything that the internet was going to bring into play. And it actually even warned about the social disconnect because of this. You know, all the stuff that we talk about, people are more in contact, but they're not as connected, right? It talked about all this stuff. And that was back in the, like, early 2000s, maybe even in the late 90s. And so if somebody was actually wanting to take personal accountability and responsibility to remain current, they've had warning signs along the way.
But you know what the problem is? We've talked about this before, and I'd be curious to hear what your guest thinks about this, because he deals with this aging group of baby boomers, this 55 to 75 or even 85 or 95 now. That's a time in your life when you traditionally did not have to change. The change, maybe I back up, you changed in that you stopped working. That's a major change, so I don't want to discount that.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of your life was just kind of hanging on or hanging out or having a good time if you had the ability to do that. It wasn't about growing anymore. It was about shrinking. Your world started to shrink. Your opportunities shrank. Your income shrank. Your everything. Health issues popped up. You weren't as strong and swift as you once were. And so it was a time to slow down. And now we're being told, no, you can't slow down. You're going to have to work longer. You're going to live longer. You're going to have to adapt and learn new skills, how to use a smartphone. You may have to go back to school. You may start a new family. You may start a new career. You may start a new business. Wow, I think that's the shock that most of us weren't ready for here.
So, Paul, you laid out a pretty interesting kind of current, real scenario.
Right.
I want to ask you, do we need to take a break and then come back?
Yes, let's do that.
I want to really address that or have Greg address that. Let's take the break.
All right. We'll be right back after this.
If you are Unlike the majority of Americans, you want to continue living in a familiar environment throughout your maturing years. In fact, according to many surveys, 82% of homeowners overwhelmingly prefer to age in place, which means living in their current homes safely, independently, and comfortably, regardless of age or ability level. With over 30 years of combined experience in residential, commercial, hospitality, and destination resorts fields, Your Home for a Lifetime is a company dedicated to empowering you to maintain your quality of life and independence by helping you make your house your home for a lifetime. Do you want to reorganize or remodel your home? Do you want to add a full bathroom and possibly a bedroom on the main floor? Are you looking to make your kitchen more functional? Is an aging parent moving in, or your child is moving out, or even moving back in? Call Your Home for a Lifetime at 949-492-1872 or check them out on the web at yourhomeforalifetime.com and find out how they can help you make your house your home for a lifetime.
Exactly what we're talking about, change, making your house your home for your lifetime. Hello? Yep, there we go. He's back.
Greg, are you there?
Okay, yep.
That commercial, our sponsor, says it all, how to make your house a home for a lifetime, how to age
in
place.
It's proactively dealing with change versus reactively dealing with change. Right. I mean, anybody who has stepped across that line, that threshold of being proactive, understands that when you do that, when you proactively, whether it's dealing with aging or preparing your house to where you have, you know, the downstairs bathroom in case you're taking care of a parent, let alone yourself, or, you know, heaven forbid, a child that gets injured temporarily. You know, we live in a surf community in San Clemente. You know, somebody gets hurt just temporarily and they can't go up down the stairs. To prepare for stuff like that in advance, to deal with the sort of unpleasantness of life in advance, insurance, financial planning, all of this stuff. If you do that, then you actually have a lot more empowerment and control about what your options are.
Yes.
If you do it reactively, you are limited to what your options are. In many cases, you may not have options because you've left it too late. Now, you know, life, and I think as a country, we're going through this right now. Not that because if you were opening your eyes, we shouldn't have seen it coming. But to be fair to a lot of people, you're saying, Paul, and I think you put it perfectly before we went to the break, is how does this generation of baby boomers that had kind of bought into the fact that at a certain point in their life, whether it's those are 401ks or some advanced planning or whatever, that they're not going to basically have to be working, they're not, you know, that there's a certain sense of security in their old age, which I think every generation has that worry. But it's very real and in a different manner today. So Greg, how do you deal with that? I mean, how do you address that with people?
Well, that's a very real question, and thank you for asking. You know, a couple things. One, it depends on the individual, and I know that may sound like a boring answer, but it really does. The guy that didn't prepare for retirement is the guy who could never balance his checkbook.
Right.
And that's just imminent. The biggest fear that I get, and I'll throw this out to you, I'll give you a quick trivia question here. When I get behind closed doors and people are heading for retirement, what do you think the number one fear is?
Number one fear heading for retirement would be, do I have enough money?
Yeah. But more specifically, am I going to outlive my money?
Yes, right. No, right.
When 401ks were put in place and Social Security was put in place, this was years ago, and life expectancy was shorter. And we all know that Social Security was meant to be a supplemental income. The majority of people never heard the word supplemental.
Right.
They think it means income.
Right.
And the 401k plan, you know, when you get into the nuts and bolts of it, you know, if you reach in too soon to withdraw your funds, you get penalized. Oh, and by the way, if you don't take money out after a certain age, you also get an even heavier penalty.
Hmm.
And when you explain that to people, they say, well, that's not right. And say, well, when you're handed a government program, then you have to play by their rules.
Right.
And those are the rules. Those are the rules of engagement. And quite frankly, my opinion is is that when the 401k was set up many years ago, it was with the intention that many people would not outlive them. Many inheritance dollars would go back to the government and the families would get what was left over. Now, I can't prove it, but now that people are living longer, again, there's the 65-year-old out there who's pushing the wheelchair around the old folks' home, and then there's the 65-year-old who's riding his mountain bike.
Yeah.
So now the challenge that we have is how do we accommodate this diversity of people in the population? There are people who would never want to set foot back in the classroom, and there's others who can't wait to find out how to use the latest computer.
Right.
So as a society, we're chasing that. And, of course, anybody under 40, when you say Social Security, they go, well, who cares? It won't be around. That's the prevailing thought. It won't be.
Right.
So the other issue that we have, too, is on a more social level, the technology we talk about, as much as it's created, my personal opinion, there's been erosion of people who have any just a skill set of being personable with one another. The social skills are lacking. And there's a lot of salespeople out there who think they can sell something via email or a text, and they're not successful. So those are other issues that we need to take a look at. But long and short of it, I think where there is money to be made, where I think there is a common good for a large number of people, I think private enterprise steps in, obviously with an intention to make a buck, but with also the intention they can provide a service that a majority of the people will buy into. And when the time is right, I can give you some examples of some of the things the insurance industry has done that has made long-term care very affordable. But when you say long-term care to most people, they think of just super mucho expensive, and that's just not necessarily the case anymore.
Mm. Yeah, but you know, there's another factor to this, and we kind of just touched on it a little bit with this diversity in society in terms of age and within certain generations, even diversity of how people are aging, right? You also have diversity that is, I think, for the very first time, at least in the last, say, you know, I don't know, 100 years maybe a little bit less, that you have a diversity in the workforce. You have a diversity that's generational in the workforce.
We have four generations in some places now working in companies.
And that in a way also has positives and negatives. The positives for the person who's older is that basically they're not looking at retirement in a certain way in a number, especially if they happen to be pursuing something that's a passion pursuit, that they happen to also be making a career path or an encore career path. Okay. On the negative side, you could argue that the boomer is now basically staying longer, so that therefore there's no room for the millennial to move up as fast. And not just in the workforce, as the boomer holds on to their home longer in an area, for example, along the coastline of Orange County, because they bought in when the house was, I don't know, $100,000, you know, $150,000 in the 80s. Now it's like over $1 million. Well, the price of a cost of living in those areas is such that the person who's born and raised in those communities cannot afford to stay and live in those communities, and therefore those communities are losing, in a way, their income earner, the income tax provider engine, and as well as their sort of their future leadership.
Yeah, we're going to be one big leisure world if we're not careful in Orange County here.
So I think if we look at things only being that they are, you know, product and service and private enterprise, you know, resolution-based things, I think we're missing the bigger picture. There's a social dynamic that's taking place that actually requires genuine leadership when it comes to policy, right? There needs to be things put into place that would start to bridge into finding the benefits of this diversity, having those work environments where the wisdom and that comes from experience that the boomers bring can be then basically shared and passed on to these millennials. That, you know, like there's some examples that I've seen that are with assisted living, for example, in Europe, where they have young adults that are living in roommate conditions with people that are older in these facilities, because it just brings in a different dynamic, right? There needs to be more to this than just being product and service based solutions. There has to be a little bit of leadership in policy, I think.
Some planning. And that's the whole problem. None of us plan for this moment in our life. The baby boomers have saved less than any previous generation. We didn't plan to live this long. We weren't. Now suddenly we're saying, oh, I wish I took better care of myself. Oh, I wish I saved more money. Oh, I wish I had some new skills. I didn't know all these things were going to happen. We should have. We were blind to the changes happening. And now many of us are not too happy.
Where does somebody like Paul, who basically recognizes the fact that they are almost obsolete in what they know, but yet they still need to be productive in order to just sustain themselves?
Right.
What advice do you give somebody like that?
Okay. And was that question aimed at me?
Yes. Yes. Sorry.
He's trying to get you to give me some free advice here.
How do we help Paul here?
I'm sorry, you cut out on me. What was the question, please?
Well, he's basically saying that how do you counsel people who are aging baby boomers like me who suddenly have to find a way to reinvent themselves to stay productive? I can't stop working. I got to adapt to the new reality. I'm going to live longer. I'm going to have to work longer. And therefore, I have to pick up some new skills and be relevant again.
Well, okay, that opens up a couple of different questions. It comes down to the individual. I get mixed answers from people. I'll go to the most common ones. A lot of times people will say, yeah, I'm ready to retire, and I've got my savings, my 401k, my pension. And the question comes up, well, how about going into a senior citizen's living? And the response I get back sometimes is no, because that's where old people go to die.
Yeah.
And then some people will go, and they come back at the end of 6 months and go, wow, this is great. I don't know why I was holding up. This is terrific.
Yeah.
Other people come back, and they say, I'm bored. I want to go back to work. I got nothing to do.
Right.
I got other people who say, I never realized how much of my life I was wasting working so much. This is terrific. And they find things to do. So one of the big things I'm seeing, and part of the reason as a coach and a mentor and a speaker and a trainer why I'm getting some attention, is that one thing, and this goes back to what our host was saying earlier, we lack leadership, and we particularly lack it in the form of mentorship.
Mm, yes.
And if there was more mentoring going on, it would be very valuable to people in business and just people in life. And I imagine in Europe, those younger people living with those older citizens is a great dynamic for both of them. And I think it's a great idea.
Did you ever see the movie, either one of you, The Intern with Robert De Niro, where he loses his wife and retires and then suddenly says, this is horrible, I'm just climbing the walls here, and decides to go back and learn something, so he becomes a 65-year-old intern. And what that's like working with a bunch of other 20-somethings, you know, they're both trying to learn a new way. He's trying to relearn, and they're trying to learn for the first time.
And I've experienced that myself. I've had interns work for me from local universities, and I'll say, here, I need you to do this thing on the computer for me. And, boy, they whiz right to it. Show me things on my computer I've never seen. And then I'll say, here, call this list of people and ask them to attend this meeting. And you can see the beads of perspiration start to form on their forehead.
Yeah, call, talk.
And there's got to be a fix in there somewhere.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what the answer is, but your concerns are all very real.
Well, that's the basis of this show, trying to dig out the uncomfortable facts of this changing life, as Rad's changing his own life and the Rad life here. We're riding along and trying to explore how do we not enter this new era in fear.
Well, and I think that one of the things that we need to maybe start off with is accept the fact that kind of cut ourselves some slack a little bit and remind ourselves, first thing, take a deep breath and go, I really don't have a choice to deal with the change. It's coming.
I hate that. You lost me already. You lost me right there. I can't change the change. I want to change the change. Stop the change.
Okay, well, then I'm gonna play a little mind game with you. Okay? All right.
5 minutes left.
If you think you are powerful enough, okay, to stop change from happening, Right? I mean, that's what you're telling me. It's like, yeah.
Or even better, roll back the change. Isn't that what this whole new presidency is all about? Roll it back.
Okay. All right. So if we are that powerful.
Yeah. Don't just stop it. Roll it back.
In defining our destiny, that we can stop change or even roll it back, right?
Yes. Right.
I mean, you know how much power and energy that you just said you basically gave yourself credit for?
No, I give it to Donald Trump because he's rich and powerful. And
but my point is, if we really perceive that we can stop time and basically stop change from happening, right? And I understand in states like California, we don't believe that there's any weather change that happens, and we don't change clothes, so things never change, and everybody stays young forever.
Everything's new and young forever. Yeah, right.
Right. Which ironically, where is it that change happens all the time? In the Midwest, right? So you would think they would be the ones that actually would be more aware of the fact that things change. And yet they're the ones who basically want to be in denial of change the most. The point is this, Paul. I think if we start every morning saying to ourselves, I don't have control over things changing, things will change. And spend the time actually developing the skill sets with the likes of people, like Craig, that basically are available to help us if we choose to take that responsibility and self-accountability and build those skill sets, that we can basically manage the change. We can
stay ahead of
it. Wave of change.
We might even benefit from it.
Right. And well, that's the ultimate, right? Now it's not just change that I'm trying to survive, but it's actually change that I can thrive in.
Yeah. Well, I would love to thrive this conversation longer, but we're down to the last few minutes here. I want to give
Craig the last few minutes of anything you want to say or share, Craig.
Well, thank you. I'm very generous. Thank you. I understand these conversations. I've heard them. I've dealt with them. And I keep coming back to kind of the same thing, because ultimately, at the end of the day, I took a Dale Carnegie course. Now, Dale Carnegie was famous back in the 30s.
Right.
And I took his course back in the 80s. And the thing that I got from that more than anything else is people will only do what they want to do. You can't make anybody do something they don't want to do. So from that premise, when people say this sucks and I can't do this and this has changed, okay, but what can you do? And what are you willing to do?
Right.
And the thing that's a pleasant surprise to a lot of people is they didn't realize there were so many resources available to them, because they thought they would, like you said earlier, maybe just withdraw, get old, and pat the grandkids on the head and just slowly fade away. And when you have the run-the-runs and you have those group sessions, I do a lot of public speaking. I'm at senior living facilities all the time, having these very conversations. It's a very uplifting feeling. So I will leave it with that. You can find me at thefinancialsalescoach.com and at the radio station, and I will just leave it at that.
Okay, and give us the website one more time.
It's thefinancialsalescoach.com.
Thefinancialsalescoach.com. All right, well, we'll look it up and for more information. I appreciate you willing to participate in kind of a real generic long overview conversation, but I agree with Rod. We're not even having these big picture conversations. We're so scrambling around trying to deal with change on a day-by-day basis, or in denial of it. We're either in denial of it until it suddenly hits us in the face, or we're trying to just scramble around, and we're always behind the eight ball here. We're always behind the curve.
You know what, Paul? Here's the thing with this show, and you know very well that when we started the show, we had I was like, I don't know where this is going,
right?
And I will say that it becomes even more and more clear, and I'm very, very blessed to have the opportunity. Thank you, Paul, for making it possible to have such conversation with people like Craig, because I think giving people a voice,
yes,
including myself on a weekly basis, kind of a place for me to be able to go back and kind of re-anchor, re-center,
yeah,
if you will, with you by my, along for the ride, for the journey, is very, very important, right? I mean, I think it does, we get caught up on, boomers prefer to communicate by phone or in person, and millennials, they're just texting and tweeting everything. Yeah, but here's the thing, boys and girls, both are communicating.
Right.
The minute we stop communicating is when we really get in trouble.
Yes.
Right? And as long as we're communicating and we encourage people, you know, we give them the voice, the benefit of our experience, and listen to them as well for what they offer that may be new and innovative, I think we can navigate these waters pretty well. But it is a very real situation, and I think, you know, thank you, Craig, for being out there and being able to maybe give some people, including, you know, spending the time with us this week, to give some advice. At the end of the day, it really comes down to personal choice, regardless of age.
And but there are resources like Craig and others out there who will not only give you financial advice of things you can do, plans you could take, like we'd even get into long-term health insurance and other things that you can do. But I think it's that right. coaching aspect, too. We all know there are things we can do, but there's something that's holding us back, and I think it's fear. It's fear. It's fear of change. And so we either deny it or we put it off or we don't deal with it until it's too late. And then we're all upset.
And typically too late is described as, oops, I've run out of choices.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah. But typically when people go, well, I better do something. The good news is that as human beings, we are pretty adaptable. I'll touch on something lightly. You talk about the older folks who are like, wow, I never thought I'd be in this position.
Right.
Gee, I got to think of something. At the other end of the spectrum, I've got the 20-somethings going, wow, this is a pretty monumental task. My parents would go to college and I'd be okay. And they're drowning in information.
Yes, right.
So you get it at both ends.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's why the coaching aspect, more and more we're going to need somebody to guide us through this. We're going to need Sherpas to guide us into this uncharted territory here. And that's what the Rod Life and other shows like it are trying to do.
But also I think we need to understand that there is a part of us that owes it to ourselves, to our journey, to our own story, if you will, to develop that muscle. Because as much as people will be there to coach us and help us, that at the end of the day, personal accountability, personal responsibility, you know, how badly do you want your life to thrive?
Yeah.
Because as much as anybody else may want to guide you to that point, unless you really want it, you're not going to put the energy behind it. That's just human nature.
That's true. That's true.
And so I cannot learn enough from people. I cannot absorb enough from people. I think everybody out there and their journey has something to share, a story, a gem, a nugget of wisdom, if you will, or even of humor and laughter, of how to traverse these changes, because the changes are happening. You don't get a chance. I don't think, I at least don't think you get a choice of saying, no, thank you, I will skip change today.
Yeah, right. Okay.
That's not going to happen.
I've tried. So, doesn't work.
Doesn't work? Well, and you're older than me, so I'll take your word for it.
All right. Well, thanks, guys, for listening. How do they get in touch with you, Rod?
You can reach us at The Rad Life on Facebook. You can also email me at Rod, R-A-A-D, period, Gantus, G-H-A-N-T-O-U-S, @gmail.com.
To find out how to make globalism work for you. Here's a guy that's embracing globalism. That's the face of globalism here.
Well, I told you this, right? I mean, I told you. I said, "Well, when you asked me, what do people think?" I said, "They are watching. They're paying attention. But at the end of the day, they'll just adapt." To Greg's point, they'll just adapt, and tomorrow will take on what it takes on.
Yeah.
And so you got to decide what is your part in this life, in this journey. Where do you stand on this? Do you sit in the back and you know, do nothing, or do you get on that mountain bike, like Greg was saying, you know, with a baby boomer, get on a mountain bike. Now you got to be careful on that mountain bike, Paul. So if you get on that mountain bike, you know, just be careful.
I'm going to blame you if I fall tomorrow here. Okay.
Well, no, and don't chase your grandson too close either. But Craig, I appreciate you being here. I would love to have you come back on the show.
Could always talk about, I'd love to hear more of the specifics of some of the affordable long-term health care, because we've had people on the show, and it really is, from my impression, kind of unaffordable. That's why so few people have done it, long-term health, and it doesn't really cover, doesn't cover enough.
And I run into that, and when time allows, I'd love to come in and just lay it out for you. And if I may give my contact information before we sign off?
Please.
Craig, C-R-A-I-G, Craig @thefinancialsalescoach.com.
thefinancialsalescoach.com. Check them out. Call Rad and tune in every week. You know, we're all in this journey together, and that's part of what we're... I find the baby boomers don't talk about this much. I don't talk about this with my friends. This is a taboo subject, change. Where are we headed? Am I going to have enough money? How long am I going to live? How am I going to live? What am I going to do? We're all just scared to talk about it even. And that's unusual because our generation was not scared of anything. I was fearless in my youth. Right. I'd try anything.
Thank you all for taking that step with us this week, and we will hope to take some more with you next week. Thanks, Paul.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.